Okay, let's do it.
Welcome to the monthly podcast. This is Referee's World.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of the Referee's World podcast. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee with the Somerset FA, and this is Somerset FA's County Training Officer and PGMOL assessor, Richard Mellon.
Hi, Darren.
I forgot to mention you are my mentor as well this time round. In this episode, we'll have some free whistles up for grabs, courtesy of bestwhistle.com. We'll get an insight to how things are done in Canada with a chat that I had recently with Chris Golden, who's an instructor from the UK, but now resides out there. Plus, before the news update, though, and bits of what have been going on that we need to talk about, Rich, a happy belated birthday to Mark Halsey.
Yeah, happy birthday to Mark Halsey. I know it was 2 months ago at least now that Mark celebrated his 50th birthday. Sorry, taxi, if it's a bit late and you pick up this message, but best wishes to you. I know both you and Michelle have not been well in the last 18 months, but it's really good to read the news that you're both in remission now, and good luck to you, and our best wishes go to you and your family.
Referee's World News Update.
So a feral bit to plough through today, as well as giving you the chance to blag yourself a free whistle from us. More on that coming up. First of all, though, you may remember in the last podcast, or one of the last podcasts, we had an email inquiring about the use and the wearing of hearing aids. So, Rich, you've done some inquiries on this one.
Yeah, I did. I went to our good friend Roger Vaughan. Roger quickly came back and gave us some advice about can hearing aids be worn. The following advice must be taken whilst bearing in mind Law 4 and players' equipment. That's where we pitched it from last time. We've been given a little bit more guidance, but it does come down to basic equipment for players. So, it has to be inspected by the referee. Make sure it's safe. But there was an add-on here as well. Comment about wearing cochlear implants.
I was going to say, actually, where do we stand with those? Because, obviously, with cochlear implants, there's an element of surgery involved to have them fitted, isn't there?
Yeah. I'm not medically qualified to make any judgment on this. But all I would say is, guys, have a look at it very closely. If you're involved in youth football, consult the parents or consult the person that was responsible for the team and the player who's playing for that team. Cover every opportunity here to make sure that you're not accused of neglecting of duties if there were an injury sustained from playing football. Darren, I think there's a little bit on the response we had from Roger about it's a contact sport and everything else. Can you just refer to that message? Can you find it?
Here it is, Rich. The British Cochlear Implant Group safety guidelines state the following. Vigorous sports, for example, football, netball, hockey and squash, it may be advisable to remove the external parts of this system if there is some risk of blows to the head. The external part should be removed and a form of head protection worn, for example, a scrum cap. And they go on to say as well, it's generally accepted children and adults will play football whilst wearing their cochlear implants, although it is advisable to check them beforehand, as you've already discussed. And children, particularly, they're emphasising here, that have had recent implant surgery are advised against playing football until the operation has fully healed. So you're looking at around 6, 7, 8 weeks, really.
Well, like I say, it just goes back to our advice. Just make sure that everything is safe for the player, guys, and no bad injury can come from playing football and a blow to the head wearing cochlear implants or hearing aids.
It's the Referee's World podcast. Still to come then, we're going to give you the chance to blag yourself a free whistle from us, thanks to our friends at bestwhistle.com. Moving on though, Kenny Dalglish, I love it when managers pipe up, wants more talks with the match officials. Now, is he becoming soft or does he want to get involved a bit more to find out what the heck's going on?
No, I don't think it's anything to do with that. But Kenny Dalglish, well-respected figure in football and loved by millions of Liverpool fans. A well-respected individual. I think Kenny's gripe at the time was related to the Stoke versus Liverpool game when there was questionable decisions, in his opinion, relating to handball incidents. And, that prompted Kenny to contact Mike Riley. Mike Riley and Kenny have had a discussion, and it's It's been in the press that they've had the debate about what can I say, responsibilities, attitudes, recognition, and things like that. And Kenny comes out and he said, "We had an extremely informative and amicable discussion, which has given all of us a better understanding of how things operate. Maybe it's something that could happen more often."
Do we know what was discussed in that meeting?
No, they don't give that specific detail, but it was discussing that match and a few other games previously in the season. And you think about it now, we're only into the early parts of the season. But Liverpool felt a little bit hard done by in not just that game, but other games as well.
Can I ask why other managers haven't requested a similar meeting with Mike Riley?
Well, Kenny Dalglish is the one that we know of this time. There is a process for the managers to follow when they have a gripe about a match official's performance. And they may not want to come out publicly about it, but they may go discreetly to Mike and have a chat in that particular style. So, like I say, this is the one that we all know about. This is the one that came out in front of the camera, and this is why it's now being pushed in the media as regards it was a good discussion.
Does this sort of thing happen regularly then?
Yes, I think it does. You know, I'm not going to quote any Football League managers, but I do know that there are a few that on Monday morning, that having viewed the match DVD, they will look at certain decisions made by the referee and they will make their observations known to the PGMO. It may not go direct to Mike, but Mike will be involved at some stage as regards any feedback going to the clubs and that manager. And that the club are invited to use that channel for feedback. And that's what we do.
OK, hopefully that's cleared that up. Now then, the old goal line technology debate has reared its ugly head again, and it looks like we could be getting it as early as next year. Tell us more about this.
Well, the goal line technology decision has been set for March 2012... This is when FIFA have their meetings. This is setting things up to discuss, and FIFA's meetings are round about February, March each year, and they set up experiments if that's going to be appropriate, and maybe this is not the right word to use, but goal line technology has been about as regards an experiment over the last 3 or 4 years, and it's being reviewed again because of obviously the Frank Lampard goal against Germany when England were playing in the World Cup, and that's obviously triggered our interest again.
Mike Cairns' goal at Chelsea.
Mike Cairns, yeah. Sorry, Mike. Yeah. So, no, I'm not. No, you know, you made the decision, you know. But big and strong Mike is. He knows exactly we're only pulling his leg. But, yeah, goal line technology is going to be decided. And on the statement that I've just got here, it does say Premier League boss Richard Scudamore has said England top flight will use it as soon as it's available and allowed. And that's the bottom line. So,
do you know of any games that it's actually been used on?
No, I don't know any games, to be perfectly honest.
Or indeed, do you know any referees that have had the pleasure of using it?
No, it was literally an experiment. And the only one I can relate to, I think there was an experiment a couple of years ago at Reading. I'm sure it was done at Reading FC when there was a delegation of representatives from various bodies. And they looked at the idea of goal line technology and how will the ball have a chip in it? How does the chip actually work? How does it trigger off a signal and all sorts of things? Again, wasn't privy to be at the thing, the trial, and of course I wouldn't be the thing, you know. But no, I wasn't privy to be at the trial of the goal line technology. It was looked at and considered, and it was rejected at that time.
Right, thanks a lot, Rich. Still to come then, Kalina speaks out about the protection of players and find out which club takes action on a racist Twitter fan. Plus, the chance for you to blag a free whistle from us, courtesy of our friends at bestwhistle.com. In the meantime, let's find out how things are done in Canada. Now, recently I caught up with Chris Golden, who's an instructor. He's from the UK, but now resides in Canada. And we started off by talking about basic differences between refereeing here in the UK and in Canada.
The English game is a far more physical game. And when I say a physical game, there's a lot more, shall we say, upper body contact, shoulder to shoulder, tough challenges for the ball. Whereas in Canada, the players primarily are from many European and South American countries, and they have a different style of playing. They like to tip-tap the ball, and the fouls are generally niggly sort of things. They don't like shoulder-to-shoulder physical games. And there's lots of shirt pulling, lots of little tugs, lots of little cheats, dare I say. and these guys know how to play the game that way.
So the way in which you would manage a game would be completely different then?
Absolutely, yes, yes. I can say from my perspective, refereeing the English way, shall we say, when I first started, was somewhat of a challenge. And players do not relish shoulder-to-shoulder challenges. So if they are challenged in such a way, of course they want a foul.
When you moved to Canada and you started to officiate, obviously learning your trade, as it were, here in the UK and taking it to a place where the physical game is not a big thing, how were the players reacting to you in terms of the decisions that you were either letting go or giving?
A lot of dissent. Yeah, a great deal of dissent. Yeah, they weren't happy.
Were you aware of the differences at that point when you were, you know, just starting out, that obviously in Canada they like to play the game a lot differently than what they would do back home?
Yeah, no, Darren, that wasn't initially apparent. And unfortunately, I would say that in my early career in Canada, I controlled a lot of games with a lot of cards, and that wasn't a pleasing way to referee a game. Not the case any longer. Mm. I very rarely give cards out these days.
Did you find that frustrating?
Frustrating, yes.
Because the players obviously found it frustrating.
Yes, but it was, they're used to being refereed by referees that issue a lot of cards. There are a lot of cards in Canadian football. Mm. And one of the reasons for that is that we have a lot of Canadian referees who have never played the game. So what they don't have is the empathy for the players. Mm. And the way they were taught, I'm not so certain that they are still taught the same way, was this happens, you give a card.
Did you find that because there's a lot of referees that didn't play the game, they literally did everything by the book?
Absolutely.
In a very sort of schoolmasterish kind of way?
Absolutely, yes. And what we've tried to teach them over the certainly over the last 10 years, is that man management is more important than the laws of the game. Because we recognise, I'm sure we all recognise, that refereeing is 90% man management and 10% knowing the laws.
Now, you're currently an instructor, so you've kind of gone through the ranks, up the levels. How does the structure work in Canada compared to here in the UK?
Well, I'm not sure how the structure works here. What I can tell you over there is that virtually anybody who's been refereeing for a few years, say maybe five, and I use that just simply as an example, could take an instructor's, or be invited to take an instructor's course or an assessor's course. If you successfully pass the course, then you will become a provincial assessor and or instructor.
There's a chap called Joe Guest, who was the referees officer here in the UK, before he took the same role with the Canadian FA. I'm guessing you know who Joe Guest is.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. How has he changed things in Canada?
Joe has tried to standardise every aspect of refereeing within Canada.
Can you elaborate on that? Are you referring to making it a bit more uniform in all areas?
Certainly, because we obviously had provincial associations, which are all members of the Canadian Soccer Association. So, as I said, I'm a member of the Manitoba Soccer Association. Each association used to identify itself with its own badge. And consequently, when we used to have national championships, of course, the referees would turn up wearing their provincial badges, and so the players could identify which referee came from which province. Well, one of the first things Joe decided to do was that we needed a Canada badge, and so every referee in Canada now wears the Canada badge.
Okay.
So there's no distinguishing any referee from any province. We're all Canadian referees.
Surely that's a good thing, though.
I think if you were a Manitoba referee, you would think not. If you were at a national championship, you certainly wouldn't be refereeing your own province. So the perception, shall we say, of bias would never be there. But as I was going to say, the nice thing about being a Manitoba referee was that the Manitoba referees always had very, very good reputations in the country. So wearing the Manitoba badge at a national championship was very important. And one of the reasons that was, we had two FIFA officials. One of them is still FIFA. And we only had 70 referees in the province.
And how big's the province?
The province is 1 million people.
Okay, how big is it in size? Just to give some kind of perspective. Because Canada's a huge country, Canada's but it's very sparsely populated when you consider the size of the UK.
Yes. Well, you could probably fit the UK into Manitoba 4 or 5 times.
And there's 70 referees for
a
province that big.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, that's pretty insane when you consider that with the Somerset FA, which is where I'm affiliated to, there's just under 700 referees for the Somerset County.
Wow.
I think that's right. I think there's about 30,000 across the UK. But obviously, the game here in the UK is obviously like pretty much the number one sport, isn't it? In Canada, it's ice hockey. Is that right?
Well, one would have assumed that it was ice hockey, but I'm happy to say that the number one participation sport now is soccer.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Really. That's obviously changed over the last 5-10 years then.
Yes, it has. And in particular, women's and girls' soccer is growing in leaps and bounds. Well, you probably will have seen how well the Canadian national women's team has been doing.
And what about female Canadian referees?
We would like more. We don't have many in our province at the moment. We probably only have half a dozen. There's a great opportunity for women to do well. We had one who moved away to Alberta, and as soon as she moved to Alberta, she made FIFA. So we still count her as being one of ours.
So there's obviously room to pick up, and if you want to pursue a career, if you're a female referee,
there's plenty of opportunity in Canada, because women's soccer is so big in Canada, as it is in the United States. Huge, absolutely huge, and the need for female referees is there.
Well, any female referees that are listening at the moment, maybe there's an opportunity there. We all move on to get on within our chosen careers. Are the referees over there, are they full-time?
No, we have no full-time referees. We no longer have a professional league. We had one from 1987 to 93, and at 93 it was dissolved, and actually in 93 was the first year I got onto the list.
Interesting you say that soccer's the number one participation sport, yet there's no professional leagues.
Yes. Well, the challenge with such a vast country is the distances.
It's the distance, isn't it, obviously.
And when we had the league, the professional league, there were probably 10 to 12 teams in the league.
You got an appointment?
Time to wake up. So there were just 10 to 12 teams in the league, and flying those distances was is very, very expensive. Plus,
not practical, is it?
Plus, as a spectator sport, it's never been that great. We only get sort of 10 to 12,000 people come.
Talk to me about the spectator's perception of a referee in Canada, in terms of here in the UK. You probably read about it a fair bit. You probably watch it on Sky TV. The crowd can be on a referee's back, and then the media will get on their back. How is it in Canada?
Oh, it's pretty much the same. I think that's universal. The spectator, of course, knows the laws of the game inside out and has to voice their opinion. We found this particularly distasteful in the youth ranks, because what was happening was that a lot of the younger referees were taking a lot of abuse and quitting the game. So what we've introduced now for youth teams is that both teams must provide what's called a referee liaison. Now, this is a person from each team who will stand with their supporters and monitor their behaviour. And it's been very, very successful. It's really cut down on the abuse directed at the youngsters.
Is that something that perhaps could come to the UK?
It works very, very well. The referee does not have to ever approach the referee liaison to get help. They would simply, if there was a problem, go to the bench, speak to the coach, and then the coach would have to go to the referee liaison and quieten down the supporters.
This is a really good idea, actually.
Well, that's certainly one for the youth. It's been well received. The clubs have embraced it, and the number of youngsters who are quitting immediately has vastly reduced. So they're sticking with it a bit longer. Well, as you know, the kids, as they get a bit older, they find other interests, and they're either hooked on the game or else they're not.
Tell me about how the academy would work in Canada, then.
Well, we call the group that we have selected the Prospects, and these are up-and-coming referees who we feel have potential to make national and or go further. Every 2 weeks, we have a training session with them. Could be classroom, could be practical, sometimes a combination of both. But we can see the benefits in their progression. It's good to get them out every couple of weeks. Now, this is also run by our, and I have to plug this, mm-hmm. our world record holding FIFA assistant referee Hector Vergara, who has officiated 14 games in 3 World Cups, which is a world record. And if ever you're wondering who the assistant referee was who denied Liverpool 3 goals in the World Club Championship, it was Hector Vergara.
You've just dumped him in, haven't you?
And the video evidence proved that he was 100% right.
It must be good to have somebody of his stature supporting your cause over there.
Of course, because it gives the youngsters something to aim for.
Is he actively involved in bringing through the youngsters?
Yes, yeah. He runs the assistant referee courses, which actually are always a pleasure. Mm. Every year before the start of the season, and I must say that our soccer season is 11 months. We have 5 months of outdoor. Then we take a break in October.
Yeah,
that's the only month we don't referee. And then from the end of October through till April, we're refereeing indoors.
I was going to say, I don't suppose there's much chance of playing a lot of soccer outside in Canada.
Not
because
the winter,
of the weather, no, yeah, I'll bet.
We get temperatures down to minus 30 in the winter. So,
ouch.
Yeah, so we don't go outside.
Tell me about assistant refereeing in Canada and how you think it perhaps differs to here in the UK.
I've always viewed assistant refereeing being a different job completely from being a referee. With an assistant referee, it's black and white. It's offside, it's not offside. The ball's out of play, the ball's in play. So it's black and white. And that's the huge difference. And I think for somebody to be really, really strong as an assistant referee, they have to have that mentality, that black and white yes no mentality, whereas it's something different for a referee. There's so many judgment calls. Am I going to call that? Am I not going to call that? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. With an assistant referee, you don't get that option. It's offside, it's not offside.
Talk to me about goal line technology then in Canada. Is this something that comes around as a discussion in the same way as it does back here, or, you know, is this something that has been trialled in Canada?
No, it hasn't. We haven't trialled it at all. And as I said, we don't have a professional league any longer, so we're not likely to see it for a long time. Mm. I mean, we've only got one set of beat flags in the whole of the province.
Really? Wow.
This is Referees World.
And that was Chris Golden, who's now based in Canada. He's an instructor over there, but he's actually from Southampton. And you can sort of tell that in the twinge of his accent, can't
just
you?
There's a
still
bit.
A bit of a mixture there. There was an interesting point, Rich, which I picked up on as a referee liaison.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Would that work here in the UK? I mean,
well, I'm intrigued by the idea. And I know colleagues at the FA will have sort of possibly being made aware of this. If not, then when they listen to this podcast, Blanche, Dean, Roger, Janie, when you listen to this, maybe we'll have another conversation if we're highlighting it to you. But referees liaison and how it might be adopted here in the UK or in England in particular. I'm not sure it's the right description for a person taking up this, but would it work in our respect programme? The other thing, I'm not totally involved in football development, because obviously refereeing is my my forte and what I follow. But like I say, I'll be interested to see how the football development teams adopt the idea, if that's of interest to them. Football liaison, I mean, at pro clubs, there is a football liaison officer. But in the description that Chris was using, mm-hmm. it wasn't in the same manner as what those guys operate. They are there to look after the want and the needs of match officials. Whereas the idea of liaison officer at football matches involving youth is a slightly different concept, and I'd like to know the ideas of how it worked. I mean, Darren, you had the interview with Chris.
I initially thought, when he told me about it, I thought it was a great idea, and taking the sting out of the tail, I think that's probably what it aims to do.
Let me just go back a couple of moments there where you use the description of taking the sting out of the game. I totally agree with that, but I don't want the passion to disappear. Still want the passion from the players and that level of involvement. A little bit more respect, because that's where it's linked to, isn't it? Respect between match officials, club officials, spectators, and you know, players. So that we don't want to lose the passion within the game, but we'd like to take the nasty sting out of it as such.
And we've got to say thanks once again to Chris Golden. Right, moving on then. I never pronounce his name right. I never have done, and I probably won't do now. Pier Luigi Collina.
That's
pretty good, isn't it?
He is the man, yeah.
Pier Luigi Collina, the scary one from Italy, speaks out about the protection of players, Rich. What's this all about?
Yeah, he's been recently talking about protecting the players and protect the image of the game. It might suggest that we're encouraging referees to be much tougher. And if that's the way you look at it, then, you know, accept it as what it's being offered. But, you know, players do expect protection from referees. And, of course, everything is related to ability all the way through, from FIFA level all the way down to grassroots. But whoever the player is, whatever level it is, the player is entitled to protection from the referee.
Primarily, that is the referee's main role, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. I mean, there's an issue here of... remember we talked last time about your pre-match and taking a game plan to the game. That really is part of what you're thinking, isn't it? You're trying to protect the image of the game. You're trying to set things up. So where would you push this into your game plan?
Reading between the lines, I think what he's probably aiming at is when you've got a game that starts to get a bit niggly, and then you're thinking, right, OK, I need to nip that in the bud now. You know, stop the half challenges, that kind of thing. Because if you let them escalate... And then that's when sort of crunching tackles start coming in. And obviously, ultimately, you've got to protect the players from that kind of thing, because somebody could end up with a broken leg and being stretchered off.
Yeah, and we don't want broken legs through tackles. You know, accidents do happen, and we accept that. People will accept that, and players will accept that. But where there's serious foul play or reckless challenge, what we're asking referees to do is to recognise these particular ingredients of a challenge. And where you see it, if it's a reckless challenge, it's got to be cautioned. Mm. You've got to stamp some authority in there. Or if you see serious foul play, you don't give a player a second chance. That's a dismissal.
So he's basically saying, toughen up to referees, isn't he?
That is the message. You know, and like I say, we're not asking for a clampdown, and I certainly don't think Pier Luigi Collina was asking for a clampdown. But it's tightening up and making sure we're protecting the image of the game and protecting players, because that's what players will expect.
OK, we've talked about social networking. There have been referees that have been punished for putting stupid remarks on about players and games at quite a high level as well. And we've discussed this in the past. But I noticed that a certain club has taken action on a fan of theirs that was posting racist remarks on his Twitter page.
Yeah, I'm not going to name or shame the person that was guilty of making racist comments on Twitter, but it does highlight the exposure that you can get. And so I say to my referee colleagues, please do not use anything that could be detrimental to your profile. Profile, not just as a referee, but your personal profile. And I have seen one or two of my colleagues putting comments on Twitter and putting on... you know, what are jokes? And we're all blokes, we're all men together, we like a joke here and there, but just be careful about what you're putting on Twitter and on your personal profile.
I think where people go wrong with this is the fact that you may inadvertently post a certain status to say, oh, like, good game today, something like that, and then somebody who is a close mate of yours might just pop up and say, oh, and start generating a conversation. At that point, you tend to forget that you're actually doing it on Twitter or Facebook, where everybody can see it.
Absolutely.
And you can get yourself so deep into a hole before realising, well, hang on a minute, look at that conversation. People can read things in a completely different way to what you have interpreted it as well.
And it escalates so, so quick. The referral that Darren made about the fan that's been banned, Norwich City are the club that have banned this fan from their ground for the racist comments he put on his Facebook. So, you know,
well done to them.
Well done, Norwich City. Thanks very much for sticking up and kick it out campaign, kick out racism. And
which kind of brings us nicely on to the kick it out campaign for this year.
Yes, yeah, the kick it out campaign. I can't remember how many years it's been going on now, but I'll quote loosely, 5, could be 10 years even. You know, I've been a little bit out of touch with the number of years because time flies by. But this year's Kick It Out campaign has been announced and it's been in the press for a while now, but I picked up some details of it. The week will include activities carried out by professional clubs, and I just say, referees, please support it. And if you are witness to any racist comments on the field of play, you have a responsibility. Please take action where you hear it and deal with it appropriately.
This is actually a very good topic to discuss in a future podcast, Rich. I think if there are any referees listening at the moment that have had to deal with a racist scenario, I know I've never had to deal with it, but it's one of those that can be quite a tender, sore subject, but it needs to be dealt with.
It has to be dealt with. That's my message, and I know it's not just my message. That's what Kick It Out is about. The FA don't want it in there. Real footballing fans, real football people don't want racism in sport, and we don't need racism in life.
So if you've had to deal with a situation of racism during one of your games, then please feel free to get in touch with us, refereesworld.co.uk. That's the website address, and you can email us through the website. It is the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellin. You can listen to us on iTunes. Don't forget, just download iTunes and then search Referees World and you'll find us there, and you can pick up all the episodes that we've done. Or you can listen online through the website, which, as I've said, is refereesworld.co.uk. Here's an interesting one, Rich, and I've noticed on quite a few of the county websites now, they're highlighting the misuse, let's say, of private homes and people's gardens.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually a good point to bring up.
Absolutely, you know. And let's talk about football, not cricket, because, like I say, there are some big hitters in cricket who quite easily clear the boundary. And, you know, I can remember smashing greenhouse windows when I was able to hit the ball far enough. And really,
that wasn't just in a temper tantrum.
No. It's
when he got told off as a kid, his mum sent him to the greenhouse.
He's making fun of me. Surely that's not right. It's been highlighted whereby, let's talk about the case in general. Many of us will referee on playing fields that are adjacent to private homes and gardens. And on occasions, the football will accidentally get kicked into these gardens. The ball retrieval system is not multi-ball, which is enjoyed, or it's actually been scrapped now by the professional game. But retrieval of the ball. Some players won't think for a second and just jump the fence, damage possibly the fence, damage the garden, tread down flowers, kick out some vegetables by accident, and just to retrieve the ball. Now, with the ball coming back, and if it happens once and nothing comes of it, then okay, let's move on. But if it repeatedly happens, the first person that resident is going to approach is likely to be the FA representative. Darren, who's the FA representative at football matches?
Well, as the referee, you will be.
Yeah, we as referees are the FA representative. And perhaps the resident is fed up week in, week out with that ball going in to the garden, and he's...
So it's another person to give us earache,
basically. Yeah, another person to give you a bit of earache. So a little bit of skills here, a little bit of management, proactive management before the game. Have a look around, have a look at what the situation is. And if you notice there are gardens and houses close by to the playing field that you're refereeing at, find out from the local team, the team that play there every week, what the responses are from the neighbours. Because there's bound to be some comment from the neighbours somewhere. And let me say to you, 40 houses... around a football pitch, I would not expect 40 of those residents, one in each house, to be totally sympathetic, empathetic to football. Well, let me suggest that ask the local secretary, go to the local secretary of the club. He'll know who the likely residents are that don't like football, don't like footballs being kicked in their garden, and particularly don't like players that just jump the fence to get the ball and do damage. So, you know, try to work that out. And once you've got that information from the home club, go to the away club and say, hey, guys, don't just jump the fence if the ball goes in the gardens.
And this is good management skills as well, isn't it?
You know, you've got to be respectful for the local people.
OK, then, before we give you the chance to blag a free whistle from us, just one final bit of news. A new initiative from a combination of counties in southern England. Tell us about this, Rich.
Yeah, this is really good. And this is taking refereeing to another level. Perhaps for some colleagues listening, it might not be a surprise. But there's a new referees initiative in Peterborough. And good luck to Rob Windell. I remember Rob from many years ago that we'd done the tutor course. All those years ago, I think it was at Lincoln. So hello, Rob, if you're listening, and well done on this initiative. I know you've been working with Northamptonshire, Cambridgeshire, Lincolnshire and Huntingdonshire as regards setting up this referees group, a select young referees group in your areas.
That's a great idea.
I think it is a great idea, and no doubt it will catch on. And me as a county training officer for Somerset, if there's any grounds for us to try and adopt something like this, then I'll be in touch with Rob and talking to him.
Those that are put into this select group on a local level, what would benefits be for the referees concerned?
Well, certainly what will happen is these young referees will be closely mentored and have access to exclusive training and development sessions. And that's me quoting exactly what Rob has put down on the press release. But it's all down to potential.
Does this mean then that the referees selected will get the good games?
Not necessarily, no. This is about development. And development of referees is, whilst it's exactly what it says, it's not an experiment. And I wouldn't like leagues, if any league people are listening to this, we in our county, just digressing slightly, we use the Somerset Youth Floodlit League for development of our academy referees. Now, we use that, and we've used that for 2 or 3 years now. And it's helping the experience of those players, also the referees, under floodlit competition. Now, under floodlit, 17, 18-year-old referees, how often will that have happened in the past? It never happened in my generation of refereeing. And so consequently, this is where they're taking this. This is a slightly smaller group than what we're working with in Somerset. And we work with five clubs as regards appointments of home fixtures. And this is what I see that this initiative is being adopted by Rob Windell in the Peterborough area.
Okay, that explains it now.
And it's not just hand-picking things. It is looking closely at all those referees that are of interest in this idea, but they have gone out there and said, right, okay, we've now got to grade this and we've got to filter through what they think possibly potentially the best 15.
And what will they base that on? Club marks, the usual stuff?
I'm not sure they will go down to club marks. I certainly think these young referees, how many assessments would they have had, but what sort of potential are they showing in the youth games that they're doing? There may not be any assessments in that, but you know, they may be taking an interest of developing tomorrow's FIFA referee. But it's a very, very interesting initiative, and I wish Rob Windell and all the guys over there in Peterborough area good luck.
It's the Referees World Podcast. I'm Darren Cullum. This is Richard Mellon. Don't forget, you can listen to us either on iTunes. Just search iTunes for Referees World. And you can listen to us on the website as well if you don't have iPod technology. Refereesworld.co.uk, which, of course, you can contact us by. You can also tweet us at Referees World. And for the first time on Referees World, we got some stuff to give away.
Yeah, it's unlike us to give away stuff.
I know. So we've managed to get hold of a load of whistles. Basically, first come, first served. Before we tell you what you have to do to get one, I think we should go outside and do a whistle test, Rich. Right, this is all a bit random, Rich. We've done some recording outside in the past, but this one, if I just set the scene, I'm just outside my house. It's a lovely evening. It's been a really nice day. It's about 7:30, 7:15. It is getting dark, and we thought we'd come out and do a whistle test. Firstly, on the whistle that we're going to give away on the podcast, it's the Hammerhead Whistle from bestwhistles.com. Firstly, Rich, you've got that one in your hand. We're going to compare that with my dirty old pea whistle that I've had for years and years and years, but has never let me down. Now,
This hammerhead whistle is a pea whistle. First thoughts on it?
Unusual shape, but
it's very boxy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit of a box. You know, it's like a right angle, isn't it? You know, as opposed, others are sort of make a sort of like 35 degree sort of acute angle. This is like 45, 90 degrees and up and down and in and out.
Go on, well, then.
I'm going to give it a couple of blasts. I'm going to give it a single blast.
But I've never blown. Just remember, in the local neighbourhood, Mike.
I've never blown this one before, so bear with me. So, how do you blow your whistle?
How do I blow mine?
Do you blow or tweet?
Right, okay.
Tweet.
Let's have a look. No, I give it a good, depending on the seriousness of any challenge. Right, before we blow the whistle, I'm just going to stand away, because obviously I don't want to blow the microphone. And so this is my old, dirty old pea whistle that I've been using for years and years and years, all right? Now, you're going to use the hammerhead.
And I'm going to move away.
Yeah, go on then. And what's your thoughts on that?
From standing behind the whistle, I don't know how it sounds.
Yeah.
But having used the classic Fox 40, for me, that is a real peeper. That's a real tweeter of a whistle.
Yeah.
What does it sound like to you?
I think it's quite loud, actually. It's definitely a lot louder than mine.
But is that my technique? Because I'm a tweeter.
That's very loud when you're close to it. And it doesn't have the... It's more of an in-depth sound, isn't it? It hasn't got the tweet that you're referring to.
Okay.
Let's do a full-time...
Yeah.
Test, all right?
Yep.
This is my dirty old pea whistle. Now Rich is going to do the hammerhead. It's a lot. There's a lot more depth in that.
It's shrill.
Yeah.
That is shrill. Okay, I think we're done there.
Yeah. Initial thoughts on that then?
That's a shrill whistle. I'm humming here. My ears are humming.
I think the rest of the neighbourhood is as well.
This is Referee's World.
Well, Rich, that was only very slightly random. Outside on a really nice, warm evening, but pretty much being very loud and boisterous in the neighbourhood. But there you go.
That's not bad for our first outdoor practical experience.
No, I think that was quite good. So if you want one of these hammerhead whistles, just to be precise, it's the Hammerhead M49. You can see it on bestwhistle.com. If you want one of these, and based on what you've just heard, if you like the sound of it, then we'll bung one over to you and we'll take the first 10 answers to this question. Rich.
Who made the famous quote, "There's people on the pitch, they think it's all over"?
It is now. Who is it that said that? If you've got any ideas, basically you need to tweet us at Referees World with your answer, or you could email us through the website, refereesworld.co.uk. And like I say, it is first come, first served, the first 10 correct answers, and then we'll notify you to let you know that you've won. Have you ever known of a referee that's had to use his fingers to blow his whistle because the whistle's broken halfway through a game or anything like that?
No, but I'm pretty sure somebody listening will know somebody.
I'll bet as well.
Yeah.
It's open to anybody around the world, because we do know that we've got a lot of listeners around the world. At the last look, 46 countries we have people listening.
46 countries, 323 cities. Good to know you're all there listening.
So thanks very much for listening to the Referees World podcast, and hopefully you'll have learnt from some stuff that we've talked about today, and hopefully we'll be sending you one of these brand new whistles.
The download is complete.